Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to CeraBoost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We're champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Lu Ngo, coming to your ears from NARM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's learn together.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to CeraBoost. And on this week's episode, we are going to talk about something that doesn't sound that great when it comes to happiness, but actually is quite important. We're going to talk about why it is sometimes good to embrace the feeling of sadness, which is something we probably don't enjoy most of the time. So let's hear from our guest today and see how and why it's so important to embrace this feeling. And we'll get into the topic very soon. But before we do that, I'm going to introduce our guest of the day. Sean Grover is a psychotherapist, author, and Buddhist practitioner who leads one of the largest group therapy practices in the United States. Sean's parenting book, When Kids Call the Shots, has been published in 5 languages, and he's appeared on over 200 radio shows and podcasts. Sean's Psychology Today blog has gathered over 10 million reads and counting. Sean lives in New York City with his beautiful family and a bossy Westie named Oliver. Thanks so much for joining us today, Sean.
Thank you, Lou. Greetings from New York City.
Yeah, well, I also heard you just went to Japan. That's so exciting.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I'm
in that odd place when you return from an amazing vacation and suddenly you're questioning your entire life.
Oh, yeah, I love that feeling. I can attest to that. You're kind of like adjusting back to your life. And I don't know, it's like that honeymoon phase straight after a vacation. And then sometimes it goes down, sometimes it goes up after that. So, you know, we'll see. But Japan is definitely one of the greatest places to travel to. So I'm hoping you're feeling really relaxed and refreshed. And, you know, we're going to have a great conversation today about embracing the feeling of sadness. Maybe you have that post-vacation depression that people have and a little bit of sadness that follows. Maybe you can talk about that. And yeah, I'm sure I have a lot of stories that I can share about this topic as well. Before we go into the topic, we have a section called Have You Met Sean? We'll get some of your recommendations to get to know you better. First question, what is a book you would recommend?
Oh, a book I would recommend? Boy, that's a great question. First, I would recommend my book. If you're a parent, it's called When Kids Call the Shots. Boy, the last books I've read have all been friends. I just read a biography of John Mung. Do you know him? He was a Japanese child who got picked up by a whaling ship from Massachusetts. And The captain adopted him and taught him English, and he became this ambassador. What I love about this book is here's this captain, and with this act of kindness, where the crew wanted to kill this child and throw it overboard as bad luck, they call him a savage. Where the captain adopted him, and it really literally changed history. So that's a great book. If you want inspiration, if you think just these acts of kindness sort of just fall away and they don't have effects, it's an amazing story, absolutely amazing story.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Thank you for sharing. Then what is a movie you would recommend to our audience?
Well, if you want to come to New York, I'm going to recommend Annie Hall. It's an old Woody Allen movie that really captures what living in New York is all about.
Well, I haven't watched that, but New York has always been on my list. So you sold it. I'm definitely going to put that on my watching list. Now, I know you've been on a lot of podcasts and radio shows, but I wonder which one you actually listen to a lot and you would recommend.
I would recommend your podcast.
Oh, cool. That's so sweet. Thank you. We're trying to grow our audience, so hopefully you can recommend it to others as well. And next one is my favorite question. Who is your role model? Now, I know we said famous, but it doesn't have to be a famous person. This could be someone in your circles or in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had some really wonderful mentors. And a therapist, we know who in the therapy community, there's famous people, but you step outside the community and no one knows who you're talking about. But yeah. Dr. Lou Ormont was a sort of legendary group therapy, one of the original group therapy psychotherapists, actually started his group therapy when no one knew what that was back in the 1950s. And I met him when I was in college. I saw him speak, and at that time, I think he was 85 years old. And he just blew me away. I called him the next day and I said, "You're my mentor." And he said, "What are you talking about?" I followed him around. I followed him for over 10 years, studied with him, traveled with him. And having a mentor in your field is the express lane to mastery. You can read books, you can have experiences, but someone who's going to mentor you, I'd really look for that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's such great advice. And I think we all need that mentor in our life, right? Whatever it is that we want to master, just like you were saying. And you said you followed him around for 10 years, meaning into his 90s?
Into his 90s, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, well, he must have been a wealth of knowledge. And yeah, that must have been so fun for you as well. I could imagine that the days that you could follow the person. I'm not sure if we could all find a person like that where we can follow them around into their 90s. But, you know, it is definitely something to think about. Final question in this part. What is a course you've completed that left a really strong impact on you?
You know, recently I did a course in, and actually it was online. With I can't think of the teacher, but he runs these this courses in sort of cultural sensitivity, I guess you could call it, and it was amazing. I'm pretty certain it changed my life. He was a powerful speaker, and we did lots of exercises. And what does identity mean? What parts of your identity do you embrace? What parts of your identity are you in conflict with? What do people see as your identity? How does that mesh with who you are or doesn't? And so by the time we finished all this work on identity, we realized that ethnicity is so oversimplified. And it's just this, we have this tragic approach to it where we see things, it's black and white, literally sometimes. Well, by the end of this course, I think we were all crying and embracing and sharing our experiences. And I was just blown away.
Yeah. Wow. That's so wonderful. And in what way has it changed your life? Because you said it's definitely changed your life, right?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, psychotherapy is a pretty white world, honestly, as particularly men my age. We got no training in sort of racial diversity, ethnicity, nothing like that. It was not even, the stuff they taught us was like reinforcing stereotypes. If you took the textbook that I studied, today it would be canceled, or you would, you know, it would just be thrown away. So what I've learned since then, and I've been working in the last 3 years, is that I'm a group therapist. So I've all the people of color in my practice come together once a month to share their experiences about how they feel about their groups and how, you know, things they're afraid to say in their groups in terms of if it's dominated by white people or something. So that group has been running it's going to be coming up on 3 years. I'm actually writing a paper on it. It's totally revitalized my practice in terms of my understanding of working with people of color, and also having a population of group in the attendance in group reflecting more of a community, of a multicultural community, whereas before it was just white people mostly and one or two people of color. So that workshop really gave me the confidence to keep pursuing this work.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear, and especially for the, you know, for the people of color that you work with, I think that's definitely very beneficial. It is a niche area, and you were right in saying that, you know, it's kind of like it's shifting in how things are being dealt with nowadays. It brings in more diversity and different nuances of different culture. And even, you know, on Absolutely. This podcast, you know, we talk about different topics, but there's always that caveat of, you know, is it one size fits all? Because most of the time it's not. And we know that it's not like that at all. So, you know, like, I think this is something that we're going to be excited to read up on when you release it, because I believe you're going to do so much more work about it in the future as well. And today's topic, I wonder if we can also try and put a little bit of that in, because I know this topic sounds like it's very universal, but perhaps not. You know, when I heard of the word sadness, I was kind of thinking, okay, this is a universal feeling, as in everybody feels it and it's uncomfortable. But obviously we have different levels of sadness, different kinds of sadness. And I feel like when we say you should embrace the sadness, it might be tricky. It might not apply to everyone in every situation. So we'll talk about that in depth. Before we do that though, this show is about happiness. So let's talk about your view on happiness, because it's going to set the scene for how important sadness is in the context of happiness. They seem to be polar opposite, but you know, they have that relationship we're going to talk about very soon. So, Sean, what does happiness mean to you?
What does happiness mean to me? Well, first of all, happiness is one of my favorite subjects, because people usually come to therapy because they're unhappy. You know, something's gone wrong. They're disappointed in themselves, or they've experienced some sort of let down or trauma or some catastrophe. So happiness, they don't usually come to therapy to work on happiness. They're kind of coming to therapy to get over something so they can be happy again. My view of happiness is I really want a durable happiness, not a fragile happiness. A fragile happiness is anything that forms an overdependence, you know, sense of materialism. I'm happy if I were this brand, I'm happy if I have this income. These are all things that are transient forms of happiness. They can be taken away at any time, and then you're bankrupt. Where does your happiness go? You know, but for me, happiness that's durable comes from a core sense of yourself, a core sense of your identity, your values, your integrity, how you choose to live your life. Because often happiness is just a byproduct of what you do. So if you go through the world miserable or creating misery, you're not going to have sustainable happiness. So I'm always curious, you know, that people can find a way to work on happiness just as ambitiously if they work on, I'm depressed, or I need a new job, or I'd like a healthier relationship. These are things we very easily pursue. But what about happiness? What about spending time with what that means? I don't think people really have a personal understanding of what happiness is. And that makes it kind of reckless. You know, happiness can come or go or disappear in a heartbeat. But once you start to study it and know where your values are and where you generate that core feeling, that stability that happiness springs from, then we're on a path to a new way of being.
Yeah, that is so true. And, you know, I think we don't really pay attention to that most of the time, which is why this show exists, because we talk about all the different aspects of happiness, especially the most uncomfortable ones. Those are the most important things to notice. And so that's kind of like the perspective of you having worked in this field, and you've worked with so many people. But I still have to come back to that question, you know, what does that mean to you in practice then? How do you actually use that, you know, philosophy to kind of view your own happiness?
Every day when I open my eyes, I have a Buddhist practice. I spend 1 hour, my wife and I, 1 hour every morning doing chanting meditation. Then we study some of the teachings. And then you look at the very concrete things. If people come to therapy for help and yet they're not feeding themselves creatively, like for me, writing is very soothing. So if I'm writing articles or working on a new book or a chapter in a book, that creativity feeds me. I often think of a checklist for myself that I tell my patients, you know, you should rotate, right? I haven't been to a dance performance in a while, so I'll go see a dance. I haven't been to the theater. Ooh, what can I see at the theater? I haven't traveled recently. Where should we travel? I think I want to take a class. It's been a while since I this morning I was swimming I felt like, gosh, I haven't taken a class in a while and I really want to brush up on my Japanese. So maybe I'll take that. So these kind of creative intellectual nutrition is what you really want. And of course, moving your body. I'm a much better therapist when I'm consistent in my working out. And the studies show that, you know, cardio workout 3 days a week for 30 minutes or more can lessen or eliminate symptoms of depression up to 70%. So people may be quick to take medication or antidepressant or anti-anxiety, but that's, for me, that's the last stop on the train. Because some lives are designed for depression. If you're not creative, if you're not social, if you're not experiencing all these things I just listed, that sounds pretty depressing.
Yeah, that's so true. I think it's a really good thing to pay attention to, you know, moving your body, exercising, taking care of yourself, because I think what you just talked about for, about yourself, it applies to other people as well. No matter which profession you're in, you kind of show up, you know, a better version of yourself when you're taking care of yourself. And when you're not doing that work on yourself, you're just not going to help anyone. So I think that's the most important thing we should all remember. And we talk about it all the time, but sometimes we kind of like, we kind of forget. And I think for me included, I need that reminder too, you know, because you know, life happens. A lot of things can, you know, put your routine out of whack, and then you just don't have the capacity or the strength to go some days, and then days becomes weeks, right? So that's the reminder that everybody needs. Now,
that's I right. Think and so self-neglect is natural.
Yeah. Exactly.
It doesn't take any effort. Neglecting that's yourself is easy.
Yeah. That's so true. I was about to say, you mentioned that too. It's kind of like, what was the word that you were using? Durable versus
fragile.
Durable happiness. Yeah,
durable versus fragile
happiness. And I think that's kind of it. You know, when you have self-neglect, but you feed yourself with a lot of, I don't know, materialistic things or superficial things or, you know, fleeting experiences, It feels like you have that level of happiness, right? But it's not. It's actually the self-work and being really committed to taking care of yourself that actually brings happiness. And I think that's one of the things that we don't think about very often. We just kind of think, okay, I just don't want to, you know, sit with any uncomfortable feelings. So I think you address a few misconceptions there when it comes to happiness already. And I wonder if you sort of notice any other misconceptions about happiness that people that you work with might have, because I'm sure there's so many, right? You address a few.
Oh my gosh.
There's so many more. Yeah.
There's so many. A lot of people, it amazes me, people, they enjoy sort of a power dynamic in relationships. Mm. Like they want to feel they have power over someone. That's a mystery to me. Why would you want that? And actually, That's not sustainable. You're not going to be able to do that. So they engage in like, they have these kind of controlling personalities because they feel like, well, if I'm in control of the relationship, I'm happy. No, you're probably anxious because you can't be in control of people. And another thing, you know, of course, accumulating wealth, that I have seen backfire probably more times than not. There's a woman I'm working with who just sold her company. She had been building this company for almost 20 years, miserable toward the last 10. I mean, miserable, absolutely. Didn't want to, you know, but she kept saying the payday's coming. Well, 20 years of her life went by, payday came, and she's very wealthy. I mean, wealthy. And within a year, she's cripplingly depressed. As an individual, she's the same person. Financially, she's wealthy. And she, let me tell you, she bought a house. She bought two very expensive cars. She spent so much money, but the happiness is just fleeting. It just didn't last. Because that core sense of herself, she didn't work on. She worked sort of on her financial portfolio, and she's very smart at these things, but her relationships were not very healthy. Her self-esteem without the business has collapsed. And she's finding herself in a depression that she hasn't felt since she was in college. So that would be an example of someone just accumulating wealth or to sort of buy happiness, which puts us in, again, in the fragile category.
Yeah, that is so true. And, you know, and I think it's that feeling of like the crash after the feeling of, okay, I bought this and I'm feeling so happy. The crash after that is even worse than, you know, when you're embracing whatever it is that you're feeling. And today we're talking about the feeling of sadness. So yes. I know that, you know, you just mentioned a lot of situations there where we should probably have sat with our sadness or something. rather than just run into, you know, buying materialistic things. I don't know if this is the same case with the person that you were just talking about, but I feel like this is what I notice with a lot of my friends, for example, when they're saying, oh yeah, like this is so uncomfortable, I'm just going to go out.
Right.
Or, oh, you know, I'm really sad, I'm just going to travel, or I'm just going to, you know, get away, or go drinking, go clubbing. And, you know, it sounds like it solves the problem at that moment, but in reality is not really solving the bigger problem, especially when we talk about our happiness, right? There's so much more we need to talk about. And so today we're talking about sadness. I don't think we need to kind of put a definition there, because it is a pretty universal feeling that everyone has felt at one point or another, some people more often than not. So the golden question is, why is it so important to embrace this feeling? That's today's topic.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of sadness.
Yeah.
I think sadness has got a bad rap. You know, especially in the age of social media, we're branding ourselves as happy, right? No one brands himself as the sad, you know, the sad girl down the block. You know, so we're branding happiness. We're selling happiness, actually. And so you wind up with sadness is sort of, you're sort of shamed. If you're sad, something's wrong. If you're sad, get over it, you know, or you're sad, it's because you're weak. Good Lord, what an awful thing. Someone actually said that to me once.
Really?
Said that to it's too long a story, but it was a teenager saying that, you know, to the group, she didn't want to show her sadness because it made her look weak. But there's lots of times where sadness absolutely needs to be celebrated, because the less you embrace and accept sadness, the more likely you're going to have psychosomatic difficulties. Like, I don't like feeling sad. I don't want to feel sad. So I'm going to get busy. Oh, my back hurts suddenly. Oh, my neck hurts. Oh, I can't sleep at night. Maybe I need more coffee. You know, so you start trying to counter the effects of repressed sadness by keeping busy. You could start gambling, you could start dating, you could start all these activities in the avoidance of sadness. I heard once my neighbor, her husband died many years ago, and she came over and she was crying in my living room, we're all hugging her. And she said, I promised myself I wouldn't cry. And I said, Joanna, my God, your husband just died. This is the time to cry. And we all had a good cry. Amazingly, people come to therapy, they'll have a memory, something will get triggered, they'll cry so much, and they leave feeling so much better. They feel lighter, they feel like refreshed, you know. So this, I think we've been sold this idea that happiness is the goal, and sadness is just a form of something to be embarrassed of or ashamed of.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's how society views it, right? And you mentioned something so key earlier, it's social media. No one shares how sad they are. Everyone shares how happy they are, which is, you know, like, I guess it is a thing where people want to bring positivity to the internet, or maybe they just want to show the highlights, and that's totally understandable. But I also do agree that, you know, there needs to be a bit more of talk on sadness and what that means for us as humans, because there is, like you said, there are times when, well, you just got to feel it. It is something that you need to feel in that moment. And to go through that, you appreciate other things so much more. And to be sad is not necessarily a bad thing if you look at what it brings to you. Because I think I learned on this podcast a long time ago, there was an episode about emotions. And the conversation was about how there are no bad feelings.
Yes.
Feelings are just signposts. So yes. Being sad is not a bad thing. It is actually a signpost that, you know, that is something that you're sad about. That is something that is important to you. So this is just my personal learning. Obviously, I'm no expert here. So we'd love to get some of your guidance on this, because at the moment, we have this big problem of society viewing sadness as this big bad thing, and you don't talk about it. People don't sit with you and talk about sadness, maybe not at the dinner table at family gatherings or, you know, in a social event. If you talk about something that makes you sad, people might go, oh, that person's weird. Why don't they talk about something that makes them sad? You know, this is like a social gathering. That might happen. And I kind of have a feeling that might happen, because it is just something that is in our head. And whenever we see other people, especially new people, we would not necessarily talk about things that are sad. So it remains at this really superficial, you know, surface levels of conversation, which is okay to a certain extent, but I also think it's not that okay because we're not going in depth into our emotions and things that matter. So what's your take on this?
Well, whoever told you that, you know, about feelings was dead right. Feelings shouldn't run your life. Feelings are something you consult with. So let's say I'm suddenly feeling sad. I may think, what's going on? Why am I feeling sad at this moment? And it may be something simple, like I'm not sleeping well, or I haven't eaten today, or I just had a memory of someone I lost. You know, so you sort of, sadness is like footprints in the snow. You sort of follow it to its source. I think in terms of celebrating sadness, for me, I think everyone should have ways of celebrating the sadness. For me, I always turn to poetry. I love poetry. And I go through like long periods of not reading it, but sometimes I'll just grab a book and walk over to the river and read some poems, or I'll write some poems. I'll write a poem for my daughter or for my wife. And it's always despair for me. When despair knocks on the door, I'm like, okay, I have to spend some time with you. You know, and through writing, through reading poetry, and some theater and opera is just a celebration of sadness, really, when you look at it. People will go and just bawl in the theater and bawl in the movies, crying, you know, so those are like, it's socially acceptable. The difficulty is with, you know, when you suppress sadness, you also suppress happiness. So if you're going around performing happy, that's a very lonely feeling. You know, I remember I was at a party and I was going through so much. My family had medical problems and I have aging parents and everything. And someone I just met, they said, hey, how are you? And I said, oh boy, I'm going through a tough time right now. She said, what's going on? I said something. She said, you know, I went through the same thing, you know, with my parents. It's so terrifying, isn't it? Yeah. And we became instant friends because we exposed our struggle, our sadness, our fear in a very natural way. And that person and I have kept in contact. So if you're in touch with your sadness, you have more empathy. It creates space for self-reflection. It triggers gratitude. And honestly, it raises your emotional intelligence. If you can be sad and share it with another human being and join with them in that feeling, if they're sad, join with them, your experience of your own sense of yourself is very expansive. There is sort of a universality to sadness because we all experience loss, right? Injury, illness, these are basic things that every living being faces. But when we connect through those experiences, particularly the sad ones, it's very healing, which is ultimately what we want. It's very hard to heal sadness in isolation.
That's so true. You know, I thought of something when you talk about, you know, how people celebrate, go to theater, go to the movies and you know, celebrate that feeling of sadness, like the socially acceptable way. And I was like, that is so true. You know, like you would go, and this is how I see it when you was talking about that. I was like, in my mind, this picture got painted in front of me. Yesterday, I went to the theater and saw Moulin Rouge for the first time. And everyone there was, you know, happy and, you know, smiling. And if you cross paths with someone, they're smiling. And the musical was so sad. And at the end, everyone was crying and, you know, together. But then immediately as that ended, what you saw was, you know, this big theater full of people that are, you know, smiling and cheerful and, you know, nothing happens. Because that's how we show up in this world, right? That's a socially acceptable way. You got to show up with a smile. If you're not smiling, something is wrong with you. And there's something to be challenged there, I think. And you did say, I think this is in your article, The Joy of Sadness, I believe that's what it's called. You did say something about that and in relation to happiness. So we did, you know, touch on a few aspects of how sadness can actually be a good thing and to be something that you can embrace. But what does that mean for us in the context of our happiness overall? You know, because we did mention happiness right at the beginning of the show. And you did say that to you, happiness means certain things. To other people, it might mean very different things as well. But how does sadness contribute to our happiness if we learn how to embrace it?
Right. Well, if you're embracing sadness, sadness tends to be a very deep feeling. You know, when people say I'm sick to my stomach or my heart's broken, you know, these are like very deep internal states. So when you move toward that state and you feel more of it, that means you're gonna question, you're gonna ask important questions, right? I just said I came back from vacation, right? Maybe I'm working too much. Maybe I want more vacation. I'm sad to be home, but I do love my life, but it's forcing me to question how I structure it and how I spend my time and my age, which I seem to forget all the time. So out of the sadness for me, the self-reflection triggers a hunger for growth. You know, if you lose someone, who hasn't lost someone and thought like, gosh, I want to tell people I love them more. You know, I want to tell people I really appreciate you. Because that loss has taught us how valuable life is, how valuable relationships is. So embracing that loss triggers the hunger for connection. So if I reject the sadness, I just move on. I just keep going like a robot. You know, I worked with a priest once. He was one of my therapy groups. And he said his favorite service to perform was funerals. And they were like, what? That's so morbid. He said, no. He said, weddings are so chaotic. And sometimes you have the feeling the bride and groom are going to be a disaster. He said, I usually can predict how long them. He said, it's so complicated, families and all this noise. He said, in funerals, you get the real deal. People drop their defenses. And he said, at a great funeral, people are hugging each other. People are crying together. They're mourning together. There's all this grief. It's like a celebration of grief. And he says, inevitably, after a funeral, he feels at peace instead of that sort of chaos, out of control feeling. So sadness and happiness, we tend to put them in two different camps. They're actually two sides of a coin. If you deny your sadness, you're going to experience a more fragile form of happiness or less durable happiness. But if you embrace your sadness, embrace the grief, the injury, the things that you've struggled with and share it with other people, actually your happiness and your connection to people grows stronger. So you can't surgically remove your sadness without doing great damage to your happiness.
Yeah. That's so true. And I think that's a really nice way to view sadness, because this show is about happiness, right? And as I told you, we talk about happiness every week. We have, you know, different aspects of happiness. But I think sadness is such an important aspect of happiness that we don't talk about very often. And in fact, we try to avoid it. And I think when you mention, you know, it makes you appreciate life so much more. And, you know, even feelings like grief, you know, you're in your extreme sadness, it makes you appreciate life so, so much more. And I thought about this kind of interesting line between embracing that feeling versus letting it consume you, because that's sadness. And I think that's really hard for us. And I think that's why people go to therapy sometimes, because they cannot really manage the level of sadness, perhaps. It kind of takes over. So as we've established, sadness is important. It's an important aspect of happiness. And in fact, if you embrace it, it adds to your happiness. But then at times, when you sit in it for too long, or maybe embrace it for too long, it takes over. So how do we, you know, define that for ourselves? Because it's really easy to, you know, it can easily take over our lives and we don't pay attention. So how do we manage it in the proper way where we understand, okay, these are the times that I need to embrace my sadness, but then there are also times where you have to kind of be tough with yourself and say, that's enough of that. You know, that's enough of sadness and I need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, we're looking at sadness that becomes all consuming, right? Sadness that is not say you enter into a stage of self-neglect. As we said earlier, once you start going through self-neglect, you're not taking care of your body, you're not taking care of your mind, your spirit, you don't have a mindfulness practice, you're not exercising. You know, the list goes on and on. I remember a woman called me, said she was having, I'm the worst day ever. I've never felt worse. And I said, tell me about your day. And she didn't sleep all night, and she did nothing, and she only drank coffee. You know, it was like 8 o'clock at night. I mean, no wonder you're feeling out of your mind, you know. There's a lot of reasons when sadness appear, it's like your unconscious tapping on your shoulder saying, hey, pay attention. You're neglecting me. You're neglecting my, and if you keep neglecting me, I'm going to make life worse. I'm going to force you to take action. So people will come in, as I said, sadness and isolation tends to breed, tends to grow like some sort of mold. But what helps immunize people against sadness that tips over into depression is healthy relationships, a healthy relationship with their body. Group therapy is built around relationships. We're not that interested in your history. It's like, how do you relate to people? When do you get anxious? When do you withdraw? Who frightens you? Who are you attracted to? We climb in the space between you and another person and get to know it. So if sadness comes up and let's say, like you said, it becomes problematic, it's time to see help. That could be through a friend. It could be through a therapist. It could be, God, you could go online now and get any support group for free. You know, there's lots of help out there when you realize that you no longer can manage your sadness. And to get help means reaching out and making contact with people and sharing your sadness. That is essential. You can read books, you can do all you can in isolation, but the only thing that truly heals people is relationships, healthy relationships. So knowing when, you know, like, I don't know, if you weigh yourself, you're like, oops, I gained 50 pounds. That may be a motivator to exercise. Or like, hey, I haven't left the house in 3 days and I'm in bed 12, 15 hours a day and I'm losing hope for my future. It's time to reach out to someone, even a complete stranger, even if it's an 800 number.
Yeah. That is such a great point. And, you know, you mentioned relationships, and I think you did mention relationship in the context of, you know, with ourselves and with others. And that reminds me of something interesting. When I think about sadness, I also think about the fact that it can help you to filter out people, in the sense that, you know, when you can open up about your sadness to others and have that empathy and have the understanding from others, you see, oh, you know, these are my people. I can actually connect with myself better.
Yes.
Thanks to these people. And
yes, you find your tribe. Find your tribe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so true. Because you just mentioned relationships. And I find this to be extremely, extremely important when we talk about sadness, because if we don't feel comfortable opening up about our sadness to certain people, I feel like that's also a signpost about the relationship.
Oh, man. I had something happen about 3 years ago. I was going through this horrible thing. My daughter was in the hospital. And I was terrified. We didn't know what was going on. And I went for a walk with a friend. I was trying to keep myself engaged. I felt myself slipping into like a unbelievable depression. I knew I had to get very active and take care of myself. And I was explaining what happened, and it was very sudden and out of the blue. And my friend, a very flip way, goes, why are you making it such a big deal? She's going to be fine. And I'm not a violent person. But I had the impulse to punch him in the face. I was like, how dare, my daughter's life is in the balance. I've had 3 or 4 doctors tell me they can't figure out what's wrong. And you flippantly say, she's gonna be fine. When are you gonna make? I was so angry. And actually, I remembered why I didn't see him very often. Mm. You know, he didn't have the capacity to empathize or feel sympathy or join with me. That if all you say is, that sounds terrifying, I'm so sorry you're going through that, that can change a person's life. But people who are comfortable with sadness have this kind of reckless optimism. where they they're telling you get over it, and also they're kind of shaming you. Mm. You know, so what you just said, Lou, is that really helped me. You will find your people, like that person at a party who I didn't know, and I said I'm having a terrible time of things. Yeah. And she responded, oh, wow, really? Tell me. And we had this great contact. But if someone's like not interested, you know, they're not your people.
Yeah, that is so true. So, you know, like I know it's very off script. And also, this is not something we talk about all the time. But I find this to be important to share with our audience that, you know, if they feel like they want to open up to others about their sadness, but they feel like, oh, I don't want to, you know, be that sad person. It's okay, first of all. And second of all, if you feel uncomfortable opening up about your sadness to a certain someone in your circle, that means that someone is probably not your tribe, just like what you were saying. On the other hand, if you find it, you know, really comfortable to open with people, even actually, you know, with that person that you opened up with, I think you mentioned that was the first time that you were meeting that person.
Yeah, just complete stranger.
There you go. And somehow you connected over the sadness part of your life, and it helped to nurture that relationship, and you feel comfortable. So there you go.
She was responsive to it. It wasn't frightening to her. And I'm sure, Lou, you've seen that, like when you go through heartache or tragedy or trauma, and you process it, work through it, and you meet someone who's also struggled and gone through it, you feel an instant connection.
Definitely.
You've been on a similar journey, and it's kind of the express lane to that relationship.
So true. See, that's why sadness is important. And, you know, it's important to also embrace it. And like we've established, not to sit in it for too long. You know, when you notice that it's kind of taking over, you need to seek help. But it's so important in our lives, not just, you know, in terms of embracing the different aspects of our lives, nurturing our lives, and find out what actually matters to our durable happiness, but also to, you know, build the relationships that matter. And I feel this is something we should talk about more. Not that, you know, we always need to go in parties and instead of talking about something funny, we talk about something sad, not in that sense. But I think it should be safe. And, you know, it should be a welcoming space when you gather with your people and you can actually talk about both the good things and the sad things that you might want to open up about. And it's hard. It's so hard for people to share.
Well, it's like if you're an artist and you're going to limit yourself to two colors. Mm, feelings are like a palette. You know, you want the whole array. You want to have access to them all. And you know, death by despair usually means someone has, you know, stopped connecting with others. You know, the sadness then becomes almost cancerous. I really believe sadness, unprocessed sadness, can kill people.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too. It eats you up from the inside without you knowing, if you don't really process it. You know, it's funny when you said that, because I was talking to a friend the other day, and I believe this is not because she doesn't have empathy, but because the depth of her, you know, understanding of emotions and processing emotion is probably not there yet, where, you know, I share something that I was struggling with, and I was kind of saying to her, you know, like, I know that this is not something great to go through. And I also know that I should pick myself up, and I will in time. But right now I need to let myself feel the sadness. And she's like, dude, you're hurting yourself. You know that, right? And I'm like,
whoa, she said that to you?
Yeah, she said that. Whoa. She said that. And I was
ouch.
And I was like, yeah, maybe. But also I have to feel the emotions to let it pass through me. Otherwise, it's going to be just like you were saying. It's going to, you know, be unprocessed. It's probably going to kill me from the inside. So why would I do that? And, you know, I talked to her later on in person, because over text message, everything gets, you know, kind of
weird.
Oh,
there's so many distortions. Yeah,
exactly. So when we talked in person, I brought that up again, and I was kind of like, you know, discussing the situation to her, and I was kind of sharing how I feel about it. And then this time, because we have that, you know, in-person connection, we can see each other's body gestures and, you know, all these like facial expressions. It's different this time. And then she could sort of understand why I needed to sit with my sadness. So I also want to say, you know, like, it's probably not because people don't have empathy. Sometimes it's just not translated well, depending on how you communicate. It's easy nowadays because you text, right? You don't even call. You text, and sometimes it's just the message is it's just weird. And so I think that's something to kind of pay attention to, and, you know, be careful when you're communicating, especially on the topic of sadness. It can translate, you know, very uglyly.
Yeah, I think there was an article a long time ago about the need for emotional education with children. That people, maybe like your friend, didn't learn how to communicate sensitively about sadness or difficult feelings. Maybe it's something that has to be cultivated because it's not a big part of the culture right now.
That's true. And also sometimes toxic positivity is a thing. And that was one of the topic of the previous episodes on this podcast, where we talk about, you know, like, people just are so positive all the time. And that defeats the whole purpose of embracing sadness and so on. You know, it's kind of like, this is an interesting relationship that I'm seeing, having talked about both topics. And I find that to be extremely important to educate people, which is why this podcast exists. And hopefully,
yay, you know,
our audience can learn from it and share with others. And in fact, you know, like, I might try to slip this into one of my conversations with my friend about how important sadness is. And, you know, maybe it might be a good dinner table topic. When is the time that you were so sad, but it helped you you move forward in life? I've had that many times, you know, like, sadness has redirected my life in amazing ways. And I really love that.
It's a great leveler of petty concerns. You know, you can have so many petty concerns, and then you get hit with, like, something that causes great sadness. And you're like, you know what? The carpet isn't that important, actually. Or that's, I can reupholster that or whatever. But sadness reminds us of our mortality. And it reminds us that this life, you know, this body's just a rental. It's got to be returned at some point. The work around death and things with death doulas and things like that are an attempt of a cultural shift in seeing sadness as just a part of a fully lived life, which is ultimately what we want.
Yeah, definitely. And so we've established how important sadness is in our lives, how important it is to embrace sadness so you can actually work on that durable happiness. Lots of theoretical things that we've thrown around. Now let's talk about something more practical. So, you know, a practice that we can share with our audience. I know you shared earlier already that, you know, when you're sad, you turn to poetry, whether it be reading or writing. But what would be a practice that you can also recommend to others? Maybe something else that you also do to embrace the feeling of sadness.
Okay. Well, first we got to notice it. We got to notice it. We may like divert our attention away from it. Like, I may say to my wife, "You seem sad today." And she, because we've been together, she would never say, "I'm fine. I'm fine. I just have a lot to do. I'm just busy." You know, if I say to my wife, "You seem sad today," she goes, "Yeah, I know. I've been thinking about my father." And then we have a talk about that. And then maybe 20 minutes later, we're laughing about something, or she's sharing, because the feeling just flowed through her, right? So the first thing we want to notice is the sadness. I'm feeling sad. You even practice saying that. I remember telling a woman in one of my groups, repeat after me, "I feel sad." She's like, "I can't." I feel sad. I can't do it. I mean, she was like fighting me. And here's a woman who really had reason to feel sad. So notice the first step, Lou. I'm going to try to stay focused. The first step is noticing it. The second step would be investigating it. Why now, under these conditions? And then you can do your checklist. You know, are you taking care of yourself? Are you doing your five things you do to maintain your spirit and body and intellect? So once you notice it, then you try to identify it, and then you move towards it. Which could mean crying. It could mean reaching out to a friend. It could mean finding a way to process it. Could be journaling, right? And then if the sadness becomes more rooted and you feel like this is becoming a way of life, you want to up your self-care I know for me, like I said earlier, last few years, we experienced a lot of like real despair, more than I had in my life, just because as you get older, you lose people, and life gets more complicated. But my meditative practice, I had to double up on. I had to do 2 hours a day just to get up and go to the office, you know, or I had to make space for seeing people who feed me. My impulse would be, I'm too busy. I can't. I got so many things on my plate. But no. I had to make sure I spent time with the people who fed me and took care of me emotionally, you know. So noticing the sadness, identifying or exploring where it's coming from, and then deciding what action to take. Those would be like the three steps towards it. Not necessarily to eliminate the sadness, but to free it up. To free it up.
Yeah, definitely. That's such a great tip and a great practice that everyone can try. I think the noticing part is the hardest, because sometimes you're just like, oh, I'm feeling uncomfortable and I don't know what it is. It's hard to name the feeling.
I had an old patient come back, it was me, and I saw her when she was a teenager. It's the craziest thing. People come back to see me. Someone said, I saw you when I was in fourth grade. I really want to come back and talk again. And I said, sure, you're welcome to come back. And I said, so it was fourth grade. Huh? How old are you now? He said, 34. Oh, my God. You know, so these life connections we make with people will feed us the rest of our lives, you know. When it comes to like battling sadness, who can I turn to in this moment? For that young person, it was me, because he remembered me as someone who could help him when he was struggling.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's important to have those connections for sure. Because actually, you know, that's a good point. It's your line of work, so people return to you for more support. But sometimes all you need is a good friend who can help you to understand what it is you're feeling. Sometimes you're not able to name it yourself. And then through a conversation with your friend, you can actually name it. Oh, turns out, you know, I'm feeling sad. Or it turns out I'm feeling angry. It's not just the feeling of sadness, but all the other emotions as well. You cannot notice it yourself sometimes.
Exactly. Because when you access the feeling, I'm feeling sad, and you spend some time, it may morph into like, well, I'm feeling sad, but I think I'm more angry than sad. Or I feel humiliated. Mm-hmm. I wish I had spoken up and I didn't. And as you're unpacking this, this sadness is now dissipating. It's breaking up, and you're discovering things about yourself. Remember, a young woman came to see me, and she was telling me, I'd seen her for many years. She came back to visit, and she was sitting there in front of me telling me, I'm doing this, and I got married, and I interrupted. I said, this all sounds great, but why do you look so sad? And then she burst out crying. Now, I don't even think she realized how sad she was. That she had all the trappings of a happy life, but that lonely child was back and she didn't know why. So you're absolutely right. Sometimes people spend so much time in denial of sadness that they don't even know they're sad.
That's very deep. That's something to think about more. You know, I think that applies to more people than we think. And I guess sometimes we do that to ourselves. Because it's easier to lie to ourselves and it's easier to get away from the uncomfortable feelings. So as much as we talk about the work of, you know, identifying it, talking about it, the self-work is extra important too. You know, you got to be honest with yourself. And self-honesty is actually another topic that we've also talked about on this podcast. And it's just kind of, you know, it's all interconnected in my mind right now. I'm just verbalizing how I process this information. But yeah, this has been a really great topic to talk about. You know, I never thought we could dissect the topic of sadness. But here we are. And, you know, it is so helpful. So thank you for sharing all of the insights so far about sadness. And I'm sure we can learn more, you know, as we talk to people experiencing more of life, read up more on the topic. But that's our time for today so far. Before we let you go, let's talk about you. We've got open mic. The floor is all yours, Sean. I'm pretty sure you have so many things you can talk about. So I wonder what it's going to be.
Well, I think I'd like to talk directly to your audience, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that if someone's out there struggling, if someone's out there ashamed to feel sad or ashamed to ask for help. I just really want to encourage you to take some action to help yourself, because too often we're waiting for some cavalry to arrive over the hill. We're waiting to be saved. We're waiting for our life situation to change. But the reality is we have to take that step ourselves. So whatever it takes, if it's writing a long letter to someone, if it's calling an 800 number, if you feel like you're trapped in sadness, there are many, many exit signs. But you're going to have to move toward them and make contact with someone else. I'm a big believer in group therapy. I've run groups for almost 30 years, and I've seen people transformed. I've seen teenagers go from drug dealers to ballet dancers because of the relationships they formed in a group that inspired them. So group therapy is out there. Counseling is out there. Support groups are out there. And the one thing people always say when they somehow manage to get themselves into a group, they always say, "I thought it was just me." No matter how alone you feel in your sadness, I guarantee there's someone out there right now who could share that feeling with you. You know, what do they say? Happiness shared is doubled and sadness shared is halved. Sharing those feelings with another human being will really be a rebirth. It will trigger a rebirth. It's never too late to evolve. So that's all I want to say.
Oh, what a beautiful message. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks again for being here too. You know, I know it's very late where you are. Just got back from vacation.
Yes, yeah. I did.
Yeah, you know, so much going on in your life, and yet you made time to join our show. And it's been a great topic. You know, it's not easy to talk about, and somehow you made it really lighthearted. So thank you for doing all of that. And, you know, I'm sure you have so many other topics you can talk about. I know you have a book on parenting. We have a parenting show. So, you know, if you're keen and, you know, if you're open, we always love to have you back some other time.
You've been listening to Sarah Boost, the Happiness Science Insights podcast, produced by the Happiness Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 Life Management Perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, share, and subscribe to our channel so that other people can find it and we can continue to provide quality content. More of our work can be found on our website, ha.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Lu Ngo. Thanks for tuning in.